Death Spiral, the only anime podcast that has crawled out of the darkest pits of despair to take its revenge on you miserable Ningen. I will have my revenge.
I'm too caught up in my own sad, dark backstory to even think about anime. I don't even know what I'm doing here. I need my revenge.
All I wanted was a normal life, but then all of you had to put garbage in my desk and throw my backpack in the toilet. So now I'm going to use my superpowers to kill all your families. That's righteous, right?
It's both righteous and morally
good.
Somebody
tell me that's good.
If I've learned anything.
It's good, right? I'm not the bad guy.
No, it's a good thing. It's a beneficial thing. It is a positive moral attribute.
Hey, remember when they tried to keep making Superman evil? Remember that? That was like a whole thing for a while.
So, I mean, that's kind of been an ongoing thing. They did it in the 90s.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Well, first they tried to make Superboy cool by giving him a leather jacket.
Hey, he was cool. He was cool as hell. That dude rocked.
He had a spiked leather jacket and round John Lennon shades, and I don't even know what you call that haircut. The Todd McFarlane special.
It's cool guy haircut.
The cool guy haircut, yeah.
Yeah.
And then when that didn't take, for good and obvious reasons, then they said, well, all right, well, if we're not going to make Superboy cool, then we have to make Superman, like, badass. How do we make Superman badass? Because he's a Boy Scout. Boy Scouts aren't badass. Sorry, Boy Scouts. It's like, you're nerds. Nobody likes you. And so how do we make the perennial good guy Superman, the man who is super at being good, how do we make him like a badass? And the answer, of course, is to make him evil. Hey, what if Superman was evil? Wouldn't that be crazy? Because he's the most powerful. He's the most powerful superhero, but now he's evil. Isn't that the most thought-provoking premise you've ever heard?
It's crazy. That's wild.
I know.
Well, I guess people love it because...
because Zack Snyder has a career.
No, what's that stupid show on Amazon? Invincible?
Oh, yeah. Also based off of a comic first.
Yeah, people love that shit. And do you remember Brightburn?
Yeah, I remember Brightburn, Evil Superman.
Yeah. Superman got bullied and now he's evil.
The Boys. What if Superman was just a fascist?
Da boys. What about my favorite anime adaptation, live action adaptation? Well, not my favorite, but probably top 10. Chronicle. Chronicle.
Oh, sure. What if Superman was Akira? Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, what if Superman was Akira?
Yeah.
And it has that one kid I really like. What's his name?
Dane DeHaan?
Yeah. He's got that weird-looking face. He's like, he has an angsty face. Like, his physical features
He's got
angsty.
A weird little goblin face, which I think is why they chose him to be the Harry Osborn Green Goblin in that amazing Spider-Man 2 that nobody liked.
Mm-hmm.
I can see what they were going for. Like, hey, Dane DeHaan, he's a creepy, weird-looking weirdo, right? He'd be perfect for what is essentially an incel take on Green Goblin. That was his thing.
Yeah. And I do want to say, like, no shade at all. You know, I think he is a handsome young man. It's not that he's, like, you know, a fucking weirdo. He's not, like, Peter Lorre or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It's just that he has a face with a lot of character, and that character happens to be school shooter.
If you fed all school shooters into like one of those amalgamation photo websites, it would just come out looking like Dane DeHaan.
Yeah. The movie whose title I always get wrong, Synchronicity, where they make the super AI Hitler by mixing all fascists together in one super AI. you remember that?
Sorry, I was thinking.
You remember that movie?
No, I don't remember that. When you said it, my first thing was I was thinking of Synchronic, about the ecstasy that makes you travel time.
No, that movie kicks ass, but that's not the one I'm thinking of. I love the ecstasy that makes you travel through time, though. It's pretty sick.
No, I don't think I've ever heard of Synchronicity.
I fucking
Synchronicity.
I get this movie's. I get this movie's name wrong all the time. Russell Crowe plays the super AI that is like the ultra AI electro Hitler made of all like dictators and fascists throughout time.
At any point in the process of creating an all-powerful fascist AI based off of the personalities of all known dictators, did anyone ever think that was a bad idea? Did they ever talk about it?
I'm sorry. I do get this name wrong every single time I talk about it. It is Virtuosity.
Virtuosity.
Yes. Denzel Washington, Russell Crowe, Kelly Lynch. It's a really good movie. It's fucking great. It's one of those ones from, I think it's like mid-90s when the, 95, when like evil AIs were becoming like a really big thing in a lot of like pulpy action movies.
Wow.
And the other trope that was really great and made its appearance in this movie is righteous cop who goes to jail for killing a bad guy extrajudicially. And so he has to be recruited out of jail for like one last dangerous mission.
Listen up, McGarnagle. I don't like you, and you don't like me.
I like you.
But if you want to get this, if you want to get 5 years shaved off your sentence, you're gonna work with my team.
Yeah, it fucking rules. It rules.
I don't know. Making virtual mecha Hitler, electronic Hitler. That's pretty edgy, man.
It's pretty edgy, dude.
Pretty edgy. It's pretty edgy, as the kids say.
You know what's funny, though, is, like, in anime, right, the evil AI, like, spreads out through the internet and becomes sort of like a, you know, an almost electronic poltergeist.
Yeah, look at any of the movies that Mamoru Hosoda has made. That's his entire career.
Sure. Well, you know, there's lots of different ones, right? There's so many of those. Mm-hmm. But in America, especially in the 90s, the AI would, like, build a body and then become a dude, even though that makes it, you know, significantly weaker than an AI poltergeist.
Oh, sure.
But, you know, if you're going to make yourself a body,
mm-hmm.
Russell Crowe is not the worst body to make. 95 Russell Crowe, he's a pretty handsome guy.
No, that's a pretty solid Crowe right there. That's some he's got some Crowe magnetism going on.
He looked good in the 90s, man.
Yeah. What did I just watch? I just watched Gladiator again after like 15 years.
Sure,
and
sure.
And that was 2000, so not technically 90s, but I think that was some pretty prime Crow in there, you know. He's got the little bangs like Roman short haircut.
he's got that stupid haircut.
He's got abs.
Yeah,
he's got the whole thing.
He looks great.
Yeah,
he looks great. Denzel looks great too. He's prime Denzel.
Oh yeah. Hey, Denzel was in Gladiator 2. There's a connection.
In Gladiator 2.
Yeah.
You mean Gladiator 2.
Gladiator as well, but also the second one.
He's in Gladiator 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the name of this, like, pulpy 90s, like, it might have been direct-to-video, but the premise was essentially this, you know, the government needs to strike a deal with the most dangerous mercenary/serial killer that they've ever dealt with, so evil that they digitized him and put him like in CD prison, you know, like the negative zone from Superman.
Yeah that rocks.
But then he learn, get this, his digital brain learns how to break out of the CD and inhabit the internet, just like we were talking about. And the first thing he does after getting like worldwide internet brainiac powers is make himself a body so that he can walk around and like have sex with women.
Well, you know, if you start off as human, then I get that, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're a human returning to a physical body, I totally get that. But if you are not human, if you are purely like a virtual creation, what do you need a body for? You don't need that shit. Bodies suck.
Well, I mean,
we are beholden to bodies.
As Ghost in the Shell taught us, those without a body, it's the only thing they crave. In fact, being a disembodied consciousness just free floating around the net may come with like some metaphysical growing pains, so to say. I don't think it's a pleasant experience, maybe, to not have a body, but to be conscious of not having a body.
But if you've never had a body to begin with, you don't have a frame of reference. Oh, so this is a thing I actually was talking about very seriously. Got into a shouting match over this.
In a Starbucks.
Because I take this shit very seriously, obviously. You know, with the new Ghost of the Shell show coming out, I was talking about this. And this is a concept that's in some sci-fi stuff, and it's something that I do agree with. If you start off as a human and you become like a full cyborg, like your entire body is like replaced except for your consciousness, you will go insane if that body cannot eat and sleep. The human brain cannot function without eating and sleeping. It will drive you fucking insane. Even if you don't need it, you have to do it.
Okay, what is the counter argument to that that you got into a screaming match over? Because that makes perfect sense to me.
Well, the counter argument was, nuh-uh.
Okay, but no. Interesting point, but have you considered, no, not really.
No. I also said you could freely move your brain to different parts of your body too, which would be like the obvious choice, right?
Yeah. Well, you'd put the brain in the central... in the central cavity where it's most protected.
Yeah, you would put it in a behind layers of armor where your pecs would be.
Yeah. Yes.
Because when you get shot in the head, you don't want to die.
No.
It's like the most obvious thing in the world to
me.
And
people are going to be aiming for the head because that's where they think the brain's going to be.
Everybody intuitively aims for the head. Even though in shooting school, they do teach you to shoot center mass.
Okay, well...
But everybody shoots for the head anyway because of video games.
Okay, well, what if we keep the brain in the head, but we just make it smaller and more armored?
What if you made your brain smaller?
No, I mean, what if...
what if it was mostly an empty cavity?
Okay, listen, what if we got rid of the neck entirely? Just sunk the head down into your shoulders?
Some people have gotten rid of the neck. I don't know if you've seen some of these ripped-ass dudes recently, but there's not a lot in between the head and the shoulders.
Listen, I'm no gin rat, but I know one thing is that you do not want to skip neck day.
You know, that's one of those things, speaking of edgy, you know... When cyborg bodies get involved, edginess always seems to rear its ugly head because it's so easy to be edgy to a cyborg body. You know, like taking people apart piece by piece and like keeping just their head alive and shit like that.
Sure. I get that. I'm not sure if that... I think, I don't know, gut opinion on there is... I think maybe doing that stuff to a robotic body... is less edgy than just doing it to a person. Like, that makes sense to me.
If you do it to a person, they die. That's kind of the big part.
I mean...
is like, you kill this kills the person.
Listen, Remy, step into the realm of imagination for a minute. I know it's hard for you. You're a clinical, logical, unbending kind of person, but let's just try and think
out... I'm hard sci-fi.
Yeah, he's hard sci-fi.
Hard sci-fi. Hard sci-fi. Dyson spheres.
Listen, I dabble in sci fantasy more than anything. So I am not constrained by your rules, CERN, sir.
You're not a Ghost in the Shell guy. You're a Battle Angel Alita guy.
Yeah. Although I've never read Battle Angel Alita.
It whips. It fucking rules.
Maybe,
man.
I should.
It's so good. It's so fucking cool.
Yeah, more of an Astro Boy guy.
Okay. All right. He's cool too.
Yeah, he's cool. He's all right.
He's cool.
But what I'm saying is, you know, I think that once you introduce the concept of movable consciousness and robot, like fully robotic bodies that you can take apart, and, you know, the body then becomes nothing more than a doll, really. You know, it is a puppet that a consciousness inhabits. Which, by the way, I'm watching Kaiba right now. Fucking awesome. I love that shit so much.
Yeah. Kaiba's probably the best anime ever made.
Which also
completely preempts The Matrix in like every single way.
Yeah. It had its thumb on the pulse there well before The Matrix or even Blade took its style.
Yeah, sure. Or Blade Runner.
Yeah, or Blade Runner.
There is a guy hunting cyborgs.
And Kaiba is very relevant to what we're talking about here, because that is entirely about switching around brains in fully robotic bodies. And it's good looking while it does it. But what I'm saying is that once the body is just a thing, once it ceases to be a human body, it is a body, sure, but it's not a human body. It loses that visceralness for me. That is not to say that I prefer seeing like blood and guts and stuff like that, but in the realm of imagination, you can do that stuff to a human. You know, you can human centipede them if you want.
You could human centipede them.
I think a human centipede is way more edgy than, say, a disembodied cyborg head that's talking to you.
Yes, it's true. It's true. If you accept the idea that you could human centipede somebody, that is certainly edgy.
And I do.
You know, as a hard sci-fi guy, it's very difficult for me to come around to that point of view, because the human centipede would clearly kill the subject.
Well, sure, but not before going on a rampage and killing the scientist. It's the strength of three people.
You would hope so, yes. So is the human centipede just a Frankenstein?
Well, it's three Frankensteins sewn together ass to face.
Well, but Frankenstein himself was made out of a lot of people.
Well, Frankenstein was made out of several different human centipede parts.
How many human centipedes does it take to make a Frankenstein? A proper one.
A proper
like
one?
Like six?
Yeah.
Six or seven?
At least six or seven full human centipedes.
Very inefficient compared to the efficiency of the human centipede.
Well, you know, you lose a lot of body mass to snacking during the process.
Did you watch those movies? Aren't there like three of them?
There's three of them. I watched the first one and a half. I couldn't make it through the second one. It was too much.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, this is not for me.
Okay.
This is no longer a joke.
All right. Yeah, you know, I always thought, I just can't see myself enjoying that kind of thing. Not that I don't like body horror, but the whole, like, okay, well, we're just gonna, like, torture these people for an hour and a half is not the kind of horror I like.
No.
That is pure edgy that I just, like, am not interested in.
Well, okay, so that brings me to an interesting kind of cross point here. How do you...
Oh, finally something interesting. Jesus Christ.
Well, how do you feel about French New Wave horror, Remy?
Oh, you mean like, well, it's not really New Wave anymore, right?
No, because it was 20 years old.
15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about stuff like Martyrs, I do genuinely very much like that.
I was going to talk about Martyrs. Like, do you think that is edgy?
Martyrs is definitely edgy, but at the same time, it is playing with, like, ideas, you know?
Uh-huh.
In a way that I appreciate, is like there's something driving this stuff. There is a light behind the eyes of Martyrs, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've talked about this before, but like I watched as many found footage movies I could possibly get my hands on, and one of them, the Poughkeepsie tapes, I found that is the only one I've ever like not been able to get through, because that is a movie that is just about torturing people.
And that, if I remember right, the premise of that one is basically it's like a serial killer has recorded himself killing people.
Yes, it is a mockumentary style found footage movie where it's intercutting between the killer's footage and like the FBI agents who are tracking him down and ultimately could not catch him. And the thing that really got me about that one, and I think this is where like pure edginess actually does come in, is that, yes, there is a bunch of footage of this guy doing extraordinarily disgusting things to people, but they would cut back to the FBI agents, and the FBI agents were like, we just couldn't. This guy was so smart. He was so smart and good at being a serial killer that we were baffled the whole time. He was just too good and smart. And it's like, okay, all right. Okay, enough of this. This is not okay. I don't need that. People like praising this guy's ability to be a serial killer on top of all the first person footage of the torture.
Uh-huh.
That is taking it a step too far. When you're like, actually, it's like it's pretty cool that he did that, right? It's like, okay, yeah, I don't need that in my life.
So I feel like that is kind of root to the definition of edginess for me, is one, like we were saying before, it is inherently somewhat nihilistic. It doesn't have like a strong ethos or guiding principle behind what it's showing you, besides that it wants to show you something shocking. And B, it is usually, in a lot of ways, pretty self-aggrandizing in tone about what it's showing you, right?
Yeah, I think, yes, that is a component where it's like, I don't know, I struggle with this because I don't think anybody truly actually believes that, like, edgy bullshit of, like, the Yuningen thing. I don't think anyone can actually sincerely hold that belief in real life. But there is sort of a thing where people write that into fiction and they can portray fiction of people doing really bad things as if that is cool. And I'm not sure if that's nihilism or if it's coming from a nihilistic place, but it definitely is a big divider between things that are shocking and things that are edgy.
Okay.
I think so.
Well, let's try and bring it home here. Let's talk about some edgy anime. Like, what comes to mind as a title that exemplifies edginess?
Well, there's so many ways to break it down, because some people would consider stuff like Shinji jerking off onto Asuka's unconscious body to be like edgy nonsense, you know? Even the entire sequence in End of Evangelion where you're just watching all the characters be annihilated one after the other.
Well, I was going to say, for me, definitely End of Eva is shocking in many places. I don't think that it is... It's not what I think of when I think of edgy, really, because I think that all of the images that they're shocking us with in that movie are very, like, pointedly put there for a reason. Like, they have symbolism and meaning behind them.
Yeah, like, it's cool to jerk off on unconscious people.
I mean,
that's what he meant, right?
Well, I mean, either that or it was a comment about how Shinji views, you know, the women in his life as vehicles for his own pleasure. But, you know, let's not get into Eva right now.
Man, people like that show, don't they?
I guess some kids have heard of it. I don't know.
I can't imagine why.
I only watch G-Cucks.
G-Cucks.
So, I don't know. Back to what you were saying, like, what do we think is edgy in the context of an edgy anime?
Well, I'll give you another example that's similar to the Eva thing. You know, Berserk obviously has been accused quite a lot, especially near the end of the Golden Arc, where you get like the Monkey Man, like, you know, fully like raping dead bodies and stuff, like in pin panels. And people accuse Berserk for stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Or even the Tower of Conviction, where there's like the demonic orgy and, like, you know, people are like ripping each other apart and stuff. People consider some of that stuff, or at least accuse Berserk of going into edginess there. And I think I don't agree. I think Berserk is not edgy. It is shocking. And Miura was using shocking moments of violence,
yeah,
in the dark fantasy sense. But I do think that it set a bad precedent for dark fantasy authors following him to use edginess pretty thoughtlessly. And I think when you do deploy it thoughtlessly, it is just pure edge. Obviously, the first thing that comes to mind in that regard is, like, you know, the first episode of Goblin Slayer, beginning with like a woman being, you know, raped to death, and then the rest of the show just being like stupid fucking anime fantasy.
Yeah.
That is edge.
Yeah, Goblin Slayer is one that I was thinking about. That's edge, definitely. That is shocking for the explicit purpose of drawing in an audience. So it has no greater story meaning to it besides, like, hey, here's this shocking thing, and now that you're all reading, we're just gonna pivot to like the regular slop that we wanted to make.
Yeah, check this out, this isn't your mama's dark fantasy. And it's like, yeah, it is. Like, Berserk came out in the 80s, dude. Like, it is your mama's dark fantasy, and it was better than this.
Yeah. Well, definitely drawn better, at least.
It's way better. It's drawn better and it's portrayed better.
Yeah, I was thinking of something like, did you ever watch or read Black Lagoon?
Yes.
I think that counts at least as a form of edgy. I don't know. I think modern anime, the stuff that's coming out right now, is a different type of edgy that we'll talk about. I mean, we've talked about it pretty thoroughly over the episodes, but, you know, stuff like school shooter vibe stuff, that's like edginess today. Black Lagoon is edginess from like mid-2000s, where it's all about doing drugs and gun violence and like sexy hit ladies in short shorts. And, oh, look at this one's dressed as a sexy nun. Isn't it crazy that a nun is shooting a bazooka at people? And this lady has a chainsaw that she sets on fire. And for some reason, like, the most needlessly edgy that it got was when it introduced, like, the twin assassins that are little kids. And they're specifically Romanian war orphans that were, like, grew up in a horrible orphanage where they got, like, sexually abused all the time, and that, and like the constant sexual abuse is what turned them into psycho killers. I think that's pretty dang edgy. That's edgy enough you can shave with.
It truly is, but also at the same time, man, that's basically every anime and manga about a female assassin or whatever. It's like, I can't even start counting how many times that's the fucking backstory. I mean, fuck, isn't that Metal Gear 4? Like, are there, yes, 18 of those characters in that game?
Well, there was four of them, but yeah, Metal Gear Solid 4, the Beauty and the Beast squad.
Oh, God, Jesus Christ, I hate them so much.
And their whole thing is that they were given amazing, like, super suits with powers based off of the horrible trauma that they experienced during war. A lot of having to do with, you know, assault and abuse of many different kinds.
Yeah.
And then part of the boss fights is you shoot them to death, and then right before they die, their ghost comes out and does sexy poses for you to take pictures of.
That's so funny. Metal Gear is dumb, dude. That shit's fucking stupid.
You know, I'm gonna be honest, I was always a fan of Metal Gear Solid. I started enjoying it way more after I just accepted the fact that it's fucking dumb.
Oh, it's fucking stupid as hell.
It's so dumb.
I mean, I like it, but it's so fucking stupid. That shit is so dumb. It's funny considering how much of, like, horror heads we are, that it's mostly pivoting around these, like, kind of gross action manga and anime and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And the fantasy stuff. When you'd think it pops up, you'd think it would pop up more in horror. And specifically, the Death Game stuff that I am deeply invested in.
I don't know. Okay, hear me out here. I think that Death Games, maybe by their very nature, have a more humanistic tone to their writing than some of this edgelord slop, specifically because it is about, yes, betrayal and horrible circumstances and survival, but at the core of a lot of these that you've described in the episodes, like, they're also about, like, people coming together to survive, people forming community and alliance, and generally having some kind of hope or prize or goal that they're trying to work towards that gives it at least somewhat of a positive spin, as opposed to, say, what was that anime that I talked about a couple seasons ago about the kid where his whole class gets isekai'd and everyone gets amazing powers except for him? But then he finds out that his shitty powers are actually the best powers, and he uses it to go school shooter on everybody.
Yes, lots of, like, hero revengers and shit like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of what I mean with the fantasy and isekai stuff seems to have a lot of that a lot of horror manga doesn't. I would say there are a few, definitely. But if you want my, like, humanist spin on Death Games, go back like 100 episodes of this podcast and find my solo episode where I gave my whole rant about it. I wrote up a whole speech and gave my entire thing about how Death Games are humanist at their core. But that's not entirely true about all of them. For example, Signal 100 is probably one of the edgiest things that has been ever put to page. And also, they made a live action movie that I haven't brought myself to watch yet. but I'm sure it's great. But the whole point of that one is, like, bad stuff happens and there's nothing you can do about it. And sometimes bad stuff makes you bad. That's sort of the whole message of Signal 100.
Now, that's not the one where, like, everyone in the world is playing and the death game rules are issued out by phone text.
No, no, no. Signal 100 is about the delinquent class who drives their, like, homeroom teacher insane. But as it turns out, the homeroom teacher was a disgraced master psychologist. And so during class one day, he subtly brainwashes all of them. And then, like, a week later, in front of all of them, he jumps out the window and dies. And it is revealed through some kind of posthumous letter or video or something that they have all been psychologically manipulated to kill themselves if they activate certain triggers.
Oh, so they're getting Manchurian candidated.
Yes, exactly. So all the kids are sitting at their desks and they all hear this and they're all shocked. And, like, one of the kids is so scared, they pee themselves, and that's against the rules, so they immediately bite off their own tongue and die. And there are 100 of these rules, hence Signal 100. And all of the characters are desperately trying to both learn and then work their way around each one of these rules, except there is one kid who forgot to go to class the day they were all brainwashed, and he shows up at school, and he's, like, the incredible virtue boy of that manga, but he is not the main character. It's very weird setup. I actually really like it. There's some really good stuff in it, but there's a lot of shit that just happens that is, like, hey, you ever seen the worst thing that could ever happen to somebody? Check this shit out. And it's like, oh, man. That is not okay.
Huh. What kind of powers does Japan think psychologists have?
Apparently, the ability to completely manipulate someone in every possible psychological way. Turning them into chickens is essentially like child's play. Like birthday hypnotists are like amateur league. You
this
know?
This anime world, the world of this manga has no concept of like in-person conversational therapy with a therapist.
Oh yeah, no, that's not a thing.
Wait, you go to a person to just, like, talk about your problems? Why?
You know, I will say, to contrast that though, There is another death game called King's Game.
Oh, like King's Cup, the drinking game.
Yes, exactly. It is pretty much King's Cup, except a death game.
Oh.
This one has a really fun setup because it starts off with one kid going to class, and he's, like, really nervous and weird. And as soon as the death game starts, it's revealed that he is the previous survivor of another death game, and that's why he was being super weird and scared all the time. That's a great setup. That's a really great way to start a death game.
That's pretty good.
But that one is all about following. They get text messages and they have to follow the rule per text message. And the entire time, it seems like there's basically no way to win. But in contrast to Signal 100, it is not about, like, hey, what is the worst possible thing we could do to somebody? That one is about, what can you do in the face of unending tragedy? How can you endure that? And so in that way, I find it kind of beautiful, even though it is also totally sicko shit.
Well, I don't know. I enjoy an edgy anime, an edgy manga, you know, here and there.
Yeah.
Like, I was trying to put together a list of stuff that I was reading when I was in, like, high school and college that I would consider, like, edgy stuff. And on here I had, like, Helsing. I think Helsing is definitively edgy. It's about a cool...
You think Helsing's edgy?
I think Okay, let's get into it a little bit, because I think Helsing has all the hallmarks of what we would classically consider the Shadow the Hedgehog type of edgy, right? It's got sexy
boy... It's kid edgy.
Well, it's got sexy boy Dracula in a big coat and a big hat. And
it's got Fuck the Church.
Yeah, it's got Fuck the Church in it. And not only Fuck the Church, but the church has super assassin kill teams that they'll send out to kill you when they hear you saying Fuck the Church.
The Pope's got hitters.
Yeah. Everybody, oh, R.I.P., everybody and their butler is an assassin. Like, that's just a thing. What else? It's got killing Nazis. It's got vampire Nazis getting their heads blown off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think it is very much within the realm of edgy, but I think it's also, like, again, I think it lacks the self-aggrandizing, like, tone to its edginess. It is, in fact, very on purpose, like, kind of goofy and funny a lot of the time.
It is goofy. Yeah. It is 100% goofy.
It's supremely goofy.
Yeah. Compared to something like Fire Punch, which has every possible edgy thing you could put in a manga, but is not something I would consider edgy.
No.
Because it has, like, a dramatic point it's trying to make and is interesting and is deeply sympathetic to its own characters.
Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think, like, because Fire, like you're saying, Fire Punch is a good example of something that should be quote unquote edgy and probably gets, you know, inaccurately described as edgy all the time.
If you saw panels out of context, probably a lot of people would say, this is just edgy bullshit.
Hey, it's about a badass dude with Wolverine powers and he's on fire all the time.
He's constantly suffering because of the fire that's on him. It's cool, yeah, right?
Actually, if you can get someone to read all of Fire Punch and you have to sell it to them that way, that's fine with me. Because by the end, they're going to be like, oh, wow, this is a story about, like, the nature of what a quote-unquote hero is. And more importantly, what is a hero's narrative?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to sound edgy also, but Fire Punch is better than Chainsaw Man.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with that. I think I agree with that. I really like Fire Punch. And I really like Chainsaw Man.
I mean, I like both of them, but, you know.
I do think that maybe just by virtue of Fire Punch is something that he was able to develop and then put, like, an ending-ass ending on. And Chainsaw Man just got too popular for its own good, and now maybe he's floundering a little bit in where to go with it or how to end it.
I told you, man. They made him take the bag.
Yeah. You know what?
Dump truck.
Fujimoto, get the bag. I don't care. I'm still going to read the chapters. You should have a car if you want. Like, fuck it.
Yeah, I wish he would use it to, like, not have to put out a manga, a serialized manga, and go back to doing anthology collections. But, you know, whatever. Do your thing.
Yeah. You know what? You have our approval. Well, okay, what about something like Elfin Lied? Because I have not watched all of it, but I would generally, in my head, consider that, like, pretty edgy. It's pretty edgy.
Yeah, you know what? That has the similar thing to the Goblin Slayer thing, where it deploys edginess as a hook, because there's not, like, a lot else to it. It is just another, like, alien girlfriend.
It is alien girlfriend, but also, what if alien girlfriend was a murder machine?
Yeah, exactly. Like, but it's the actual story itself is not that edgy. It's like a doofus girl who doesn't know anything, like, falls in love with the first boy that shows kindness to her. And that's the whole story. It just happens to also have, like, lots of murder in it. It's not nihilistic in the way that you were talking about before. Whereas something like Freak Island by the guy who did Pumpkin Night totally is absolute wall-to-wall edge. Because it is just about relishing human suffering. That is what Freak Island is. At some point, it doesn't even have characters anymore. It is just victims and perpetrators. And you're just seeing them clash.
Which goes back to what I was saying about, like, one of the core fundamental levels of edginess is that it is just imagery that is meant to shock. Like, that's it at its base core, to me at least. Devoid of meaning, devoid of ethos. It is just something that wants to shock you with its words or its images.
Sure. I guess one of those things would be, I mean, it's all personal, right? And I think for me, maybe I have, I don't know, a strange Again, this sounds very strange from somebody who reads almost exclusively death game manga, but like, I am a very sentimental person, and I need manga that has like empathy for its own characters, you know?
No, I totally like, get that. I agree.
Even if the manga is intentionally killing all of them off in gruesome ways, I'm still like, well, I mean, that's fine. I don't care if you like cut their heads off or whatever, but like, can you treat them like people at least?
I mean, can you even write a character well if you don't empathize with the character? Not sympathize, not agree with, but like, should a writer have understanding and empathy of all of the characters that they create?
No.
No? No? All right, that's no. It. We figured it out, folks.
Fuck
we
it.
Figured out writing.
Nope. Writing's easy, actually, and you don't need any of that shit. You just do whatever. Writing is just and then, right?
And then?
Or but. If you're a really good writer, you use but then.
Oh.
Something happened, but then something happened. Right? Right?
Okay. All right. I see where you're spinning. But yeah. Okay, but then what happened?
Well, but then something else happens. And then after that, something else happens. And then, but then something else happens.
And then the end.
Yeah. Okay, let's, just as a capper, what is the best edgy manga or anime?
What is the best one?
Yeah.
Right off the cuff, for me, Spawn.
Really?
Yeah, Spawn.
Okay, I like Spawn. Spawn's cool.
Yeah.
I like that guy.
Yeah, he's
pretty sick.
Yeah, he's a Vietnam vet. He works for the devil. He kills ice cream men. I love that guy.
He kills CIA guys.
He kills cops. He kills CIA guys. He kills feds.
He almost single-handedly wipes out the entire CIA. Pretty cool.
That's dope. Man, Spawn's so cool.
Spawn's so fucking cool. And he's like nice to homeless people, so he's like a good guy.
Yeah.
You know, in a very similar vein, and this is a little bit of recency bias, I could go and find other stuff, but Devilman Crybaby, which we've mentioned many, many times.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Literally ends in a complete apocalypse caused by the main characters with the death of horrifying deaths of basically everyone on Earth. But still great. Just truly incredible, like jaw-droppingly amazing in every way. I guess that'd be my call. And it's also about a debutoman.
Debutoman.
Two debutomans.
One red, one white.
Well, Spawn's black.
Okay, let's go to break.
Guys, well, now that we've gotten that out of the way,
shook it out of our system.
Yeah, let's get back to the non-edgy anime, the ones we all love, the wholesome anime, the cottagecore anime, the cozy witch anime that's so dominant this season.
Yeah, the stuff that puts you in a real fuzzy mood, you know, makes you want to get a cup of tea,
yeah,
cozy up on the couch, watch some anime for the week with your buds, you know, feel good stuff.
Forget about how awful the world and your life is, just for 2 fucking seconds. Can I just get 2 fucking seconds, please?
No dice.
You know, not a lot of edgy anime this season. I finally watched Lazarus because I found the Japanese dub.
Yay! Yeah, we talked about that.
I'm so glad. Did not have it on the HBO app. Did not have the dub on the HBO app, which I guess is not surprising.
So messed up. Well, it is not officially released the Japanese dialogue with subtitles version in America.
Yeah.
That is still a couple weeks coming, thanks to this being a co-production of Adult Swim. And for some reason, apparently either Viacom or WB or Cartoon Network or Adult Swim.
Some evil assholes.
Someone along the production chain decided that, no, we only release dubs first. You can get the subtitles later, which is an ontologically evil decision. very anti-human, anti-consumer, anti-fun. I do not like it.
They looked out at the market and they were like, simulcast? Hell no. Why would anyone want that?
We can't afford the bits. We can't afford the bits of information.
HBO is also the only one, because I guess because of Adult Swim, that hosts Apartment Complex C, which is like a short horror anime that I really wanted to watch, but they just literally...
That made a brief appearance on Shudder. Did you know that?
Oh, did they put the first episode on there?
They put the first three episodes on Shudder.
Okay.
Yeah.
I it's cool, but like there is no Japanese dub to be found anywhere on any of the official streaming sites, which is just...
That's awful.
Wild. Why would you do that?
You know, if they keep doing stuff like this, the people are going to be forced to take power back into their own hands. That's all I'm saying. It's not a threat. It's a promise.
I want to see fan subs make a huge return.
Oh, my God.
Like, hobbyist level.
This is an aside, but can I just say that I miss the practice of fan subs putting each different character's dialogue into a different font that they felt best exemplified that character? Mwah, I love that.
Yeah, they were obviously superior. People who actually cared, you know?
How am I supposed to know it's a girl character if the subtitles aren't highlighted in pink?
Yeah, exactly. It really goes to show you, I mean, this has been true since the very early days of piracy and all that, but really goes to show you, people with passion will do the best work even for free. Sometimes especially for free. Really kind of destroys the entire idea that, like, competition breeds excellence.
Why would they want us to root out competition for ourselves as opposed to possibly maybe collectivizing this effort?
No one would ever color code subs if they weren't being paid massive money to do it. Come on. You're dreaming.
That is only the work of a true artist or a true psychopath. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, I watched Lazarus, and I don't really have much to say about it because, like you said, it was just parkour.
It's just parkour.
The whole first episode.
It's hardcore parkour.
It was just parkour. Which I'm not against.
No.
It sounded good. It looked good.
Yeah.
But no story to speak of, really.
I mean, I think that I'm more okay with that than what we got from Metallic Rouge, which was a bad premise and a bad story packaged inside, like, kind of decent animation. I mean, it's pretty decent animation. In fact, it is
over-animated was good.
In some spots.
There was a lot of animation, and most of it was good. The problem for me, besides the story being inherently nonsensical, was that those like weird mech creature monster designs sucked.
Yeah, they weren't great.
They sucked. They were really bad. That is absent from Lazarus. No weird monster design in the first episode at all.
I mean, the premise of Percocet that also kills you 3 years later, like, is pretty inherently unserious. But again,
yeah, also the Percocet could kill you right now.
Yeah.
If you
take enough
determined.
Of it.
Yeah, if you wanna.
Yeah, they never address that in Lazarus. Like, if they take more of the super drug, can they overdose on it? Does, like, the more you take, the more it shortens your 3 years? What if you keep taking it? Does it keep resetting the 3-year timeline?
Oh, yeah. The more you take it, the longer you get to live. It just resets the clock like it's on a cooldown in yeah. World of Warcraft.
Yeah, I don't know. Lazarus is fine. It's got good action.
Yeah,
the
cool.
Parkour is cool to look at.
Good soundtrack.
Yeah, good soundtrack.
Which, you should expect, but it sounds good.
And it's all right. But I watched some other newer, even more new spring 2025 anime premieres.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, we're still on that train, baby. I look outside, the cherry blossoms are booming. They're booming and blooming. I think I wanted to talk about this one last week, and I think you've watched this as well. You watched at least the first episode of Kowloon Generic Romance, right?
No. Unfortunately, my watch partners overruled me, and we watched the first episode of White Lotus Season 3 instead.
Do they hate you?
No, I think they were just very enthusiastic about White Lotus, which I don't blame them. It's a good show. And Walton Goggins did not make an appearance in any of these anime, so I think that played a big factor in it.
Well, fair enough. I can't compete with Walton. Cannot stand up to the big old Goggins.
No one can. He's unstoppable.
Actually, he would be great. He'd be great in a live-action adaptation of Kowloon Generic Romance. I would unironically love to see that. I watched the first episode of this and immediately went and started reading the manga because I was so intrigued by the premise. In summary, the setup for Kowloon Generic Romance is that it is in an unspecified amount of years in the future, but still definitively like in the future from the present day. And there's kind of like hints at a vague, you know, future tech existing and permeating throughout the world. You know, there's a lot of allusions to this big pharmaceutical company that like is making just miracle drugs that don't kill you in 3 years, I might add.
Oh, that's dope.
I know. I don't know. It seems like a bad business model to me to not have the drugs kill you after 3 years of using them. But maybe that's just...
It is very funny to make a drug that kills you. It's just so funny to me. It's still so funny to me. The beach that makes you get old.
Yeah.
Oh, the man. Drug that makes you dead. Oh fuck, that's cool.
And so it's kind of like a, you know, futuristic world except for Kowloon Walled City, which for some reason seems to be set up as almost like a nostalgia reserve. I don't know what else to call it. It's like a nature preserve but for mid-1980s Kowloon City, where everything inside of Kowloon is still kind of, it hasn't changed in an unspecified amount of decades, but it is, if you look up any like Hong Kong Kung Fu city film from the 70s and 80s, it looks like that.
Hell yeah.
Which is
hell
great.
Hell yeah, brother.
You know, the first thing that comes to mind, which is obviously it was also the source material that Dorohedoro is pulling from when it designed its whole kind of like world city design from. It's doing that thing. Lots of like hole in the wall food stalls and restaurants and weird shops selling esoteric
hell
herbs
yeah.
and stuff like that.
You gotta love it. You gotta love that shit.
Yeah, I love it. It's great.
It's great.
Graffiti up the wazoo. The highest quality graffiti you've ever seen on every inch of concrete. It's great.
I don't know. You have not read Gachikuda yet. You've really got... That's some... There's an entire dedicated artist who just does the graffiti in that manga.
Hmm.
Fucking sick.
Hey, we need to employ a graffiti guy. Get him on the payroll.
We need a graffiti guy.
Yeah.
Oh, also, by the way, speaking of this, Criterion is rolling out a bunch of Hong Kong like crime and action movies right now
in its
big collection. I think they have the election movies are on there right now. God damn, that's some good shit. Anyway, please continue.
Anyway, so the narrative centers around these two real estate agents who work in a small office together, and they're doing the... This is where the generic romance comes in, because they're doing a generic romance
thing.
Yeah.
I was wondering about
that. You know, they have the whole personalities clashing, but actually they're flirting with each other kind of thing going on. You know, you have the carefree guy who doesn't take his job super seriously and is always late and... You know, is kind of bossy, and he butts heads with the female lead, who is, more prim and proper and very serious about her job. And most of the episode is centered around them fighting about, like, which restaurant that they're going to eat at for lunch today.
Cool.
Yeah. Very generic, very romance. Now, it does throw in a couple different wrenches into the works of this whole thing that I would maybe venture to say kind of makes it not generic, maybe makes it fairly unique overall.
What?
I know. The title is misleading.
Huh?
Now imagine this, this romance, this flirtation.
I'm imagining
in this weird
I'm imagining Failure to Launch starring Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
That's my rom-com frame of reference.
Yeah. And, you know, failure to launch, but it takes place inside the Gormenghast castle.
Yeah, instead of a Motel 6.
Yeah. So in your imagination there, throw in a giant artificial planet being built above the Earth, just kind of omnipresent in the background.
Done. Completed.
Yeah.
Finished.
So that's one thing that I'm assuming we're going to touch on later, but apparently they're doing the cyberpunk thing where all the Elysium thing, where all the rich people on Earth have decided to just abandon the planet, and they have created a floating space station / watch colony that replaces the moon and just kind of floats above the Earth and looks down at all the poor people.
Okay, sure. Sounds good.
And then, yeah, we haven't really, you know, gone into what that is going to mean in terms of direct influence on the narrative so far. It's just kind of there. And then the other thing is that what if, mind you, let's put yourself into the shoes of this woman. You're starting to, like, you know, kind of have feelings for your coworker. You're going on some dates. You're flirting. Everything is feeling good and new, and you're excited about this new relationship. But for some reason, everyone that you encounter assumes that you're his girlfriend, even though you're not officially dating yet. And not only that, but apparently you've been his girlfriend for, like, 5 years.
Okay.
And you have no memory of this. You just started this job like a year ago. You just met this guy, and it's just starting to get a little bit more than just a flirtation.
Sure.
But for some reason, everywhere you go, waiters, bartenders, people, like random people in shops on the streets, you know, they all greet you like, not only do they know you, but that they're good friends with you and that they've known you for many years. Wouldn't that be kind of weird?
This is sounding like my life.
Yeah, exactly like your life.
This is strange.
So, I don't know. I'm very intrigued with what they're doing here. They're obviously setting up some kind of either amnesia or false memory kind of plot device in motion, which I'm a sucker for. I think that stuff is cool. I like The Machinist. I like Inception. I like, I don't like Christopher Nolan as a person, but I liked Inception. what was the other one?
Which one? The other one of what?
Tenge Daimakyo.
Oh, Heavenly Delusion?
Yeah, Heavenly Delusion.
Tengoku Daimakyo,
thank you.
Which has started up again, by the way. The manga is no longer on hiatus, and it is publishing again.
So they're doing something here with manipulation of memory, and specifically about nostalgia. I think the fact that the city setting itself, Kowloon, is by law, by Earth decree, like supposed to be some kind of time-preserved nature, like sanctuary, almost. Like I was saying,
sure,
where everything is not allowed to, it's like one of those pioneer towns where you go and watch people make bread out of acorns or whatever.
Right. Colonial Williamsburg.
Yeah, exactly. So it's something. Or
Slaughterhouse 5.
Yeah.
Is that what that was about?
Let's say yes. I never read Slaughterhouse 5, unfortunately.
Oh, I forgot you don't read books.
Yeah. Hey, I'm getting better. I'm reading some words on some pages. Yeah, I'm not completely hopeless.
You've graduated up to Stephen King.
I know. I can read that pulp shit.
Yeah, you'll be reading real books soon.
So, what I feel like they're doing here is obviously playing on the concepts of nostalgia for a place and a time and a relationship at a very specific, like, point of time. Like, that seems to be the feelings they're trying to evoke. I think that what the city is kind of like almost like a retirement home for people who can't or don't want to keep up with modern times and sensibilities. It's doing this dichotomy of all of the people outside of the city, all they talk about, all the news talks about is how great this false Earth that they're building in the sky, this future planet,
sure,
is going to be, and how it's essentially going to be heaven.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, like how I'm being bombarded by advertisements for Neom.
Neom?
You haven't seen this shit?
No,
I get these
what
ads
is Neom?
All the time. It's like an artificial, massive city built inside a giant mall being constructed by, like, slaves in Dubai.
Jesus.
You really haven't seen this shit?
No.
Hold on. I'm going to send you.
Oh, what was that? The Boots Riley movie.
Which one?
Sorry to Bother You. Yeah. That's what the evil CEO from Sorry to Bother You was doing. He just wanted to make a giant Amazon city where all the people who lived in it were Amazon employees.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, check this shit out.
Oh my God.
Just look at this shit.
Oh my God.
Look at this shit.
This is ghoulish.
It's so fucking insane. I get ads for this place all the time. And it's all concept art because they haven't actually done anything.
Oh, man. Oh, and you can tour it in VR.
Yeah. I mean, this is literally Elysium.
Yeah.
They're doing it completely unironically.
Yeah. And so that's what they're doing in the world of Kowloon Generic Romance. Essentially, they're
building Neom.
Yeah. They're building Neom in the sky. And everybody who either can't afford to or doesn't want to gets to stay on Earth and live in a dirty city and have their memories wiped. I think that's kind of what they're going for.
Why would you want to live in Austin, Texas, when you could live in Neom, the Saudi Arabian engineered business city?
I don't know. It still might be a better sell than Texas. I don't know. I'm one episode in. I haven't taken the time to watch the two other episodes that come out yet, but I am going to circle back to them because I'm intrigued. I've been reading the manga. One thing I want to point out before I move on is that compared to the manga, the anime is taking a racehorse fast pace to how it's adapting this. The first episode covers roughly the first volume and a half of the manga.
Wow.
Well, I think it's because a lot of the manga, like many pages in a row, are these very well drawn out, like thoughtful kind of contemplative cityscapes with no dialogue, just kind of the characters walking through these neighborhoods of this city, you know, different levels, and just kind of experiencing all of the people. And, you know, both the people and the clutter and like the life there, but also like the small quiet areas, which I think is really beautiful. It's really well drawn. It evokes that feeling of nostalgia that it wants the readers to feel.
Sure.
You know, obviously, I think it's going to hit more for somebody who grew up, say, in Tokyo or Kowloon or even New York more than, say, me. But I think that the fact that it's
yeah, who grew up in a one horse town in the sticks.
Listen, I did.
The only friends you had growing up were the corn stalks that you would talk to.
Listen, I'm an Okie through and through. Everybody knows that. I grew up on a farm, well away from all electricity.
Farmy brat.
I didn't see a telephone until I was 17. But I don't know if it can make me feel nostalgia for a place that I've never been. Like that's good art. That's evocative art. That's a recommendation from me.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched Scorsese movies.
Sure. I've watched Last Temptation of Christ. I know all about this shit.
I watched I did not watch Annie Hall. I skipped that one.
That was Woody Allen.
Yeah, I know. That's what I said. I specifically did not watch Annie Hall because I'm woke.
Good for you. Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. Everybody clap. Everybody clap for him.
And if you've seen that movie even before you knew all the stuff, you're canceled.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
I think that I should leave then. I was forced to watch that movie in a film class in college.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Wow. Disgusting. Makes me sick that you had to watch that in class. They should fire that guy.
I apologize. I'll try and find a way to adequately make it up to you and to our listeners who I know I've heard.
If that's true, then why did you put Uma Musume Cinderella Gray on this list of things you watched?
No, I'm proud of that decision.
Really? Over Annie Hall. I honestly, there's not a huge difference in my mind.
Okay, so yes, we've dunked on Uma Musume quite a bit because it is by definition the most cynical, hollow cash grab of a product ever made. It's about sexy racehorse girls and the people who bet on them. I cannot quite think of something more like morally repugnant than that, maybe, other than if they were like, I don't know, what if Breaking Bad had sexy anime girls? I don't know. Have we done that yet?
Who would be the sexy anime girls? The son?
No, but the
Jesse?
Yeah, Jesse and Breaking Bad. What's his name?
Walter?
Yeah, Walter.
Walt?
Walt. Jesse and Walt.
They would be the sexy anime girls?
Yeah.
Not the other characters. The two leading men would be the sexy anime girls.
Well, no, every character would be a sexy anime girl.
Wow.
Was that not obvious?
Every single one, huh?
Every single one. And it would have a gacha game to go with it.
Even Tuco?
Even, especially Tuco.
Even the weirdo that Jesse Plemons plays in that one season?
Meth Damon?
That's not okay. It's very mean. That's very mean to him. He's a good actor.
Okay, I did watch Uma Musume : Cinderella Gray, which is a spinoff of the Uma Musume Pretty Derby anime series, which is based off of the Uma Musume Pretty Derby gacha phone game, which has ruined lives, just completely destroyed economically a great portion of Japan. Look into it. I don't have time to fact check. But this is the spinoff series that is more comedy focused. It's about the loser school, basically.
Wait, I thought this was the edgy one.
No, this is the funny one. This is Uma Musume Fumufu.
Wait, so the other one isn't funny?
No, the other one is very much taking itself like super seriously about these teenage horse girls that race.
God, I hate this shit so much. I hate it so much.
I don't know. I had to give it a shot just because I thought it would be funny. I ended up definitely liking this more than the main series. Not by much, but I think the hook that this follows a racing team that specifically goes to the loser school for bad racers that no one's ever heard of, I think that's kind of funny.
Why would they even have a school? Why would they have a loser school to begin with?
Well, you see, the Pretty Derby is the national, that's the national circuit. These ones are competing on a totally local circuit in southern Japan, away from the hustle and bustle of the Tokyo life.
Oh, so these are all the fixed races.
Well, there's definitely some of that.
Like the Jake LaMottas of the racing, the horse girl racing competitions.
Yeah, yeah. And so this follows what was her name? The first thing I was surprised to figure out is that the main character's name is not Cinderella Gray. That's just the name of the series. There's no character named that in the show.
Okay, well, it's a bad name, so I guess that's good.
Anyway, it follows this young racehorse girl, and as you might have guessed with many of these sports anime, she is the best at racing. And the fact that she only goes to the loser school is because A, she's like really dumb, like really, really dumb. And she's poor.
Okay. She's dumb and poor. And that's why she goes to loser school.
That's why she goes to loser school. But
wow.
She consistently surprises all of the other loser racers with the fact that she is in fact the best racer. Well, I was about to say superhumanly fast, but again, they're horse hybrid women, so they're all fast compared to a regular person, which there are regular people.
That's so weird, man.
In the world of this setting, there's three types of people. There's regular people, you know, men and women and everything between, and then there's horse girls, and they're their own thing. And there are no horse boys. Which is another interesting...
That's not okay. That is not okay. How this can't be allowed to continue.
I don't know. I enjoyed it more than
it's
I thought.
Actually,
there were some good gags.
I know why they don't address the like horse boy thing. I get it. But actually leaving them out implies something even darker.
That's what I was thinking about right before we started recording.
Yeah. It's really fucked up.
Yeah, it's really messed up, right?
It's really bad. Like, you guys, come on.
So our main character, her thing is that when she was a little kid, everyone said that she wasn't able to run good because she had jelly knees.
Wait, she's Forrest Gump.
She kind of, yeah. She, yes. Oh, no. It is a bit of a Forrest Gump story.
Oh, no.
You see, when she was a kid, she had jelly knees and therefore couldn't run fast.
And she was dumb and poor.
Yeah, and she was dumb and poor.
Oh, God, no.
But through lots of training and through her poor single mother scraping together every penny she had,
yeah,
she was able to...
And her girlfriend going off to Harvard or whatever.
Yeah. She was able to train well enough to overcome her jelly knees. And in fact, her jelly knees are what make her like the best at running because she's like more super flexible than everybody else. And that lets her run faster.
Yeah. Very important to being a horse.
Yeah.
Is having jelly knees.
Well, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong here, but like in the real world, when a horse has bad legs, specifically a racing horse, don't they shoot the horse?
Yeah, they shoot him in the head.
They shoot him in the head with a big gun, right?
Sometimes, like, on the track, if they hurt themselves.
Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, that is not present here. They did not shoot her in the head, and this let her overcome her crippling disability of having jelly-like knees to become the fastest runner. And so she goes to, you know, a shitty racing school where she encounters, you know, at that point, it turns into kind of like a standard fish out of water, new girl in town kind of school, slice of life anime for half of it, where she goes to the new school and, you know, she's awkward because she's kind of like dumb. And the only thing she thinks about is racing. Like, she's obsessive about only thinking about racing to the point where she, like, isn't really present for a lot of conversations that are happening around her.
Okay.
There's an ongoing bit where she's too preoccupied with thinking about racing to realize that her classmates are trying to bully her, thus making the bullying completely ineffectual.
What else would be important in the life of a racehorse besides racing?
Well, okay, that actually
like learning,
brings up one
learning
of the,
to count with stomping your hoof on the
one
ground.
One of the actual really funny jokes from the episode is one of the horse girls like asking that exact question to their teacher in class. They say, hey,
oh, shit,
are you going to talk about any of the other like career prospects like that we have because this is such a bad racing school? And the teacher is like, yeah, but don't worry about that stuff. We're just going to talk about racing here.
They're one step ahead of me.
Yeah.
The teacher's like, well, you could race or you could be like one of those riot police horses. Those are your only two options.
You know, there was another gag where he calls the whole class, where he calls his own class bad at racing. They're like, hey, so yeah, you just explained how the local circuit works, but what if we want to go to nationals? And he just straight up says like, yeah, none of you guys have to worry about going to nationals.
You guys all suck.
You all suck.
You're all terrible and you suck at this. And it's pretty much the only reason you're alive too. So.
And again, I have to remind you that horse girls in this universe are reincarnated souls of real racehorses that died in our real life world universe. IRL.
Horses are getting isekai'd into the anime girl universe and then forced to race again.
So yeah,
it's hell.
It's hell. It's hell.
It's horse hell.
But we get to profit off it.
What do you mean we? I'm staying the fuck away from that shit.
Oh, I already got my gotcha team lined up. I am making bank over here.
Ugh, awful. Awful. I hate it.
Okay. I just... I watched the first episode of the last Umamusume anime, and I just thought I'd give this one a try. Don't watch this. This is, in fact, evil. It's evil stuff. Gacha games are evil. Horse girls are evil. This is not good for your psyche.
No, it's very bad, in fact. It really makes Fate Stay Night like look like a shiny example of brilliant fiction. Hey, what if Alexander the Great was a sexy anime boy?
That puts seats.
That's a billion times better than, hey, what if Seabiscuit was a sexy anime girl? Sorry, it's just better.
Oh, we haven't even gotten to Seabiscuit. Seabiscuit is like the Sephiroth of this universe, an unattainable demigod.
Oh my god. I cannot.
Okay, all right, all right, all right, all right. I did watch one other thing before we wrap up for the day. This is something that we pointed out, you know, when we were looking at the spring 2025 lineup. I watched the first episode of Zatsutabi, It's Journey.
It's Journey.
It is Journey.
No, it is Journey.
It is.
It's Journey.
It is Journey.
It is Journey.
It is Journey.
And is it?
Well,
I haven't watched this one, so I don't know.
That depends on how you define a journey, because I was unexpecting this. Maybe I should have. It is about a struggling manga author who, and you know, we've all had this experience. We take our manga draft to the Kadokawa headquarters. We sit down with our editor. They look through our drawings. They say, yeah, you know, this is good, but you know, there's no real thematic through line. There's not like a story being told. You're just kind of moving around between set pieces. So, you know, let's rework these a bit and come back again in, you know, a couple months. We'll see what we can do. And what is a struggling manga author to do when you have that experience, huh? Like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
If I know anything about struggling manga authors, it's they'll hole up in their room, chain smoke 24/7, and get really obsessed with an idol management game.
Well, what if I told you that our main character does the opposite of that?
Oh, shit.
Like, almost the exact opposite.
Sounds like a fantasy manga.
In response to this crushing defeat at the hands of Kadokawa, she decides to place her fate in the hands of a Twitter survey. She like is basically shitposting, and she only has like, I think it shows her profile. She has like 20 followers tops, and she puts out,
that's me for real.
Yeah, I know, right? And she puts out a, you know, one of those stupid little Twitter surveys, like, hey, vote on what I should do next. And it's something stupid like, oh, which direction away from Tokyo should I go? You know, up, left, or down?
What about right?
Well, right takes you into the ocean.
I mean, that's still legit.
And she makes this stupid post and then goes to sleep and wakes up in the morning to a bajillion replies, because it turns out that one of the people that follows her is actually a well-known successful manga author who has like 40,000 followers, and they retweeted their little survey question, and all of that person's followers decided to chime in with their answers.
Can we get one of those?
Yeah, I know. Can we get one of those?
Is there a way we could? Can we get one of those?
Do we know anybody?
That'd be great.
Oh, shit. We don't know anybody.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, no. And from there, it turns into, like, I can't understand Okinawan from last season. It turns into a travel brochure commercial. But instead of being, instead of trying to draw people into one location, it is now about her basically letting, you know, it's a Twitch plays her life kind of thing, where she just kind of lets the nebulous voting populace on Twitter dictate which city she goes to next. And then the episode is, you know, essentially her reviewing hotels and trains and towns and restaurants in these places that she goes to. I don't know exactly how this is going to help her big, like, magnum opus fantasy manga that she's trying to write. But that's what we're doing. That's it. And so, I don't know. Is that a journey? Because to me, maybe that sounds just kind of like a little vacation. Like you're getting fed up with work and you need a little vacation.
Well,
you know, you go to the next town over and you stay at a nice hotel and have a nice meal and then you get back to it. Because that's what she's doing.
What I know about journeys is an unexpected journey has a dragon in it and some trolls and a magic ring. But it sounds like her journey is very expected, like almost planned for. So maybe she doesn't need any of that. Maybe it's just like she goes around and eats food and stuff.
Well, I suppose that is maybe the one hook about it is that it is very pointedly unplanned. It just happens that...
Oh, so it is an unexpected journey.
Well, it's an expected unexpected journey. She is setting out...
The known unknown.
Yeah, she is setting out from her house with the express purpose of taking a little trip. She just doesn't know where she's going or how she's going to get there. So she gets on a train line that she's never been on, and she goes to a hotel without a reservation, by the way. She's playing real maverick with this one.
Oh, shit.
And she walks up to the desk and says, hey, I don't have a reservation, but do you have a room that I could stay in? And they said, no, we have an empty room. You're good. And then she stays there, and she has a nice evening at the hot springs.
All these hot springs, man. It's crazy. We don't have anything like that.
What's up with that?
It's crazy.
What's up with that, huh? I don't get it.
These people are always going places, and then there's like a hot spring there. Is that real? Does that really happen?
I don't know. I'm going to take a journey to find out. I'll let you know.
I'm going to have to take a journey and find out if there's real hot springs. Because I kind of don't believe it. I think they're all lying.
Some kind of magical, naturally occurring hot bath just out in nature? I don't buy it, mister.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to some national parks, and every once in a while you see an open body of hot water, but the people that go in it die. So I'm just like, how is that real?
They tend to dissolve a little bit.
Yeah, they burn to death. So I just find the whole concept to be kind of eyebrow raising.
You know, I'll say this. I've been to Japan. I didn't see one hot spring.
Well, where were you?
I was in Tokyo. That's like all of Japan.
And there were no hot springs in Tokyo?
I didn't see one.
That's crazy, man. So they are lying.
Yeah, they are lying. Lying to our faces.
This is ridiculous. So maybe that's the unexpected part, is that there are hot springs. She's like, whoa, I thought these didn't exist.
I don't know. That doesn't sound like a journey to me. That sounds maybe just like a day trip. It takes a 3-hour train ride and then you go home. I guess the bit, I don't even know if it's a bit. It's not even a journey. It's not even a continuing journey, because she comes home after going to each of these places. It's not like one long thing where she's going from place to place. The loop is she gets her manga rejected. She takes a little vacation. And then she comes home and repitches her manga. And it gets rejected again, and so she takes another vacation.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a journey, but then again, if you go on an unexpected journey, you come back and you write a book called There and Back Again, so...
Yeah, but that was self-published.
I don't know.
Bilbo didn't have to put up with Kadokawa.
That's true. It's a better way of life, the Hobbit life. You don't have to go through a fucking extortionary publisher.
Yeah. So, I don't know. You know me. I'm a sucker for anything that features, like, food or well-drawn backgrounds. There's not much of a story to it. I just explained the entire story. And so it is mostly just a animated version of a travel program that is highlighting various small towns around the countryside that, hey, maybe you would also like to take a small, quote-unquote, journey to this place and spend money there.
It's a very tiny journey.
Yeah. Which I would, like, I agree with them. I would love to do that. That would be great. Unfortunately, I don't live in fantasy land where people can just go out on tiny vacations multiple times a year.
Yeah, well, you're not a mangaka who have the luxury of just picking up and going wherever they want with all that manga money.
I know, right? From all the payments she's getting from her rejected manga.
Her rejected mangas. Yeah, you should just start learning how to draw. Why haven't we done this so far?
Yeah, I don't know. I know people who learned how to draw and they're not doing great either.
Yeah, but they're not turning in rejected manuscripts to Kadokawa, which apparently is how you make the big bucks.
Is Kadokawa already producing English language anime podcasts? Can we get in on that? Can we get ground floor there?
The only official ones I know of are Crunchyroll, and obviously we're better than that. So
much better than that.
If we can maybe, yeah, we're so much better than that. If we pitch the right way and get rejected, maybe they'll pay us for it.
God, I hope so.
I'm putting that on the to-do list. Okay, got it.
Get paid.
Get paid. Get rejected by Kadokawa. Pitch to Square Enix.
Get rejected by Square Enix.
Get rejected by Square Enix. Man, if we could just get our podcast to be like an in-game podcast and like one of the Final Fantasy remakes, like you pass one of the radios in-game and we're talking. Damn.
Oh, or on the radio in Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, the famous Square Enix game, Grand Theft Auto.
Listen, it's Grand Theft Auto, but it's going to be with sexy anime girls. It prints money.
Maybe a Yakuza game. We could be a podcast.
Oh, that would be.
Kiryu puts in his AirPods and you listen to us talk about anime.
Hell yeah.
God, that'd be sick as hell.
I do want to play that Yakuza game in Hawaii. That looks pretty sick.
Yeah, it's sick as hell. Yeah, there's that pirate one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
hell yeah.
Cool as hell, man. Hell yeah.
All right, that's it for me. Those are the anime spring 2025
2025 premieres.
Still coming. I got one more on my list that I haven't watched yet that I want to talk about. And then I think that'll be it for me for this spring season.
Wow, all the way through your list already. Well, I've got a few more left to go. Hopefully I can squeeze a few of them in before the next episode of White Lotus, but I might have to do it on my own time. We'll see. But I'll definitely have a new one by next week. Don't worry.
Well, once again, handsome, beautiful, tall listeners, thank you for sticking with us. Check out the Instagram, check out the TikTok, follow us on Blue Sky.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.
You're welcome.
You're welcome, people. All right.
Bye. Bye.
Ow, I hurt my hand.
I hurt my hand.
I hurt my little hand.
I hurt my hand clapping the wrong way.